Western Illinois University has a new president and a full plate of challenges before him. We talked to Dr. Guiyu Huang about his mission and his priorities and facing a flood of problems. As all this snow melts, are we ready to face the rising waters in the cities? Dr. Guiyu Huang has been president of Western Illinois University for barely 2 months, and he's had to deal with an ongoing pandemic, a fiscally restrained state government budget, and an unusually strong letter from Quad City leaders questioning Western's commitment to its Moline campus. We talked with President Huang from his offices on the Macomb campus. First off, welcome to Illinois, but you've got quite a beginning. I mean, starting with the budget that the governor just unveiled, you sent out a news release saying that you're thankful that at least the numbers are the same as last year, basically a freeze in your budget. That's right. The best you thought you could do.
Yes, correct. Now, the budget's been flat. However, that's good news because, you know, I've known other places that saw their budget go down, right? Being flat in a difficult year like this is great news. I am thankful, and we all are thankful to the governor for his support of public education, higher education, his commitment to protecting the university, public universities in Illinois.
What does a flat budget mean, though? I mean, does it mean any cuts? Because, like, obviously inflation, that some things are going to cost you more.
That's always true, right? And again, flat means not going down. So that's really important, right? Because it's also a message that we are sending to our faculty and students and and staff, right? Now, the opposite would be cutting. Cutting would be painful, would be perceived as a lack of support. But in this case, I think the governor has been very good about supporting all publics. So then the rest is on us. We need to grow our enrollment, continue our good work to grow our revenue.
And how do you plan on doing that? Because that's easier said than done.
You're right. Easier said than many things are. You know, a lot of things boil down to words, right? But behind the words are action. We are very aggressive in pursuing our enrollment goals. So I can tell you that this spring, our enrollment is flat compared to spring 2020. Okay, it's flat. It's also good news because of COVID-19, because of the challenges in recruitment and enrollments that all universities face today. But we are developing a recruitment enrollment plan, and that plan will be developed by the end of the semester. And that plan will be consistent with the university's strategic plan 2017 to 2027. The plan we are developing will provide the blueprints, the pathways to greater enrollment. And enrollment includes the traditional age students, face to face on campus, and also online students. We are doing work in that area, as well as students from other countries, from international universities. So we are trying to grow enrollment both for the undergraduate and the graduate division. So we have some plans being developed, and we'll follow those plans closely and aggressively to grow our enrollments. Concurrently, we also are doing a lot of work towards improving our student retention rate. That rate has been good, but we want it to be greater and to be higher. So the retention plan we are producing will identify the major barriers, obstacles to student success. Once we know those problems, then we can identify strategies to help students do better, especially those students who are academically challenged, so that they will stay here to graduate in 4 to 5 years. So that plan will also be important. Of course, I've been telling my colleagues on campus like recruitment, which is the responsibility of the enrollment division, but indeed it's the responsibility of everybody else on this campus. Every faculty member, staff member, and the students themselves also have a responsibility towards their own retention effort. So all the things that we are doing, I'm hopeful will produce better results in terms of enrollment and the retention.
Well, as you well know, I mean, your predecessors have tried to do the same thing, but enrollment has been dropping over the 10, 15 years. You're competing against other schools in the university system. You're competing against neighboring states as well, and you know how difficult that's been for Illinois over the last few months, if not the last few years. What are you looking at that's different than what perhaps has been done over the last 5 years?
Oh, great question. So I've already enumerated a few things we are doing, right? The recruitment and enrollment plan and the retention plan. Those are important pieces we are going to use as tools to help us grow enrollment. Now, other things that we are doing is also important. I have been emphasizing the importance of new markets. By new markets, I mean going to areas that we have not been in before, whether those are within Illinois or in neighboring states or in other states, and also, of course, international. To me, in my opinion right now, the international market is the potential there is huge. You cannot overestimate the potential of the international market. The other market is online. WIU has done a great job offering online courses and programs, but I'm thinking that we can do more. We can have more online programs geared towards adult students, non-traditional students, so that the international online, these two can help us grow our enrollment as well. Another piece we are pursuing, and I'm excited about it, is the idea that we want to make this university more distinctive, both in its academic programs, service programs, curricular activities, extracurricular activities, innovation. Make the university a good example of distinctiveness so that we stand out more from our colleagues, our peers, so that we become more attractive to our students, their families, and to students in other states, and again, internationally. So I know it's very competitive. We have to stay ahead of the curve. We have to be innovative and aggressive at the same time in our efforts to recruit more students to come here and study at Western Illinois.
Well, as you well know, the mayor of Moline has sent relatively blunt letter questioning Western's commitment to the Quad City campus. Chamber of Commerce pretty much saying that the promises made 5-10 years ago haven't been met right now, and also questioning the commitment from Macomb. What do you say to that? Because I know that you're meeting with some of these people in the Quad City area who really are questioning whether or not Western is the way to go forward when it comes to a public four-year institution in the Illinois Quad Cities.
Yeah, now we are committed to the Quad Cities campus, and now, of course, with the caveat that I'm very new, I do not have all the memory of this institution regarding what happened or what did not happen, right? I have to take what I heard with a grain of salt, with understanding. Of course, education is about the quality for life, to change the lives of individuals, also their communities, in this case, in all the cities surrounding the Quad Cities campus. I need a larger context to understand the comments made by city officials, local community leaders. They probably mean well. They probably had ideas that they think the university should adopt. Now, since my arrival 50 days ago, we have been in some conversations with different individuals. I'm scheduled to meet with many more in the forthcoming weeks to know exactly what their concerns are No, of course, there is a difference between reality and perception. Though I understand sometimes perception is reality, right? We wanted to work with the city, the mayor, and many other individuals who have an interest in seeing the future success of this university and its branch campus in Quad Cities. I've been on that campus a number of times. I'm traveling there again in a week, I believe. So learning a lot, hearing a lot, and thinking a lot. We are establishing a strategic plan for that particular campus. We have some very good ideas regarding program development, student services. So I have no doubt with all these things done, we will see a lot of improvement. Again, I cannot revise history. History is what it is, but nobody has a complete picture of history. But we will learn from our successes as well as our failures, if there are any failures at all. I want to learn about that campus. I want to hear the community's perspective on it, and our strategic plan will reflect very clearly, the concerns that have been raised over the last, as you would see, several years. So again, I'm pretty confident that working with all stakeholders, our own faculty and staff, city officials, we will be able to make a firm commitment to the future of that campus. We will have more programs that will meet the needs of the Quad Cities area.
In some ways, you're serving two masters, because Macomb, some people in Macomb think that the Quad City campus is taking away from Macomb students and perhaps valuable money. And then you have the Quad City campus that says you're not investing enough, you're not giving enough attention. I mean, that's an interesting position that you're in with two different locations, but technically one school.
Technically it is one school. It's one mission, one brand, all right, in two locations. The way I see it is really like a one-directional highway with the two lanes going the same direction, right? At the same speed. I have not heard that one campus is the issue to another. We are one university serving one mission, serving Western Illinois. Macomb and Moline are two larger entities that we serve, but there are many, many other counties we serve as well. I think WIU in the past century and the past 124 years has done a fantastic job in educating Western Illinois citizens, the communities. Our branch campus is a little younger, but has done a lot of good things with all the programs there, like engineering, counseling, museum studies. Education is a great contributor to economic development. Never has been a detractor. If we want the economy to be strong, education plays a critical role. And that's the role that our Quad Cities campus has been playing in that area for the past decades. And I can only see things become stronger and better and playing an even larger role in the development of the economy in Western Illinois.
Well, Western and all of the other secondary schools, as well as public universities and private universities, have now dealt with COVID-19 for a year. And one would say pretty successfully, because the pandemic didn't strike schools as badly as some had feared. On the other hand, you do a lot of in-class as well as a remote learning. What do you say, first off, to the graduates of 2021? What can they expect as far as any ceremony is concerned? And secondary, what do you think the pandemic's lasting impact will be at Western?
Oh, great. Really great questions. We are looking at a hybrid, possibly a hybrid format for our May commencement for the class of 2021. I know the students worked hard. They deserve a well-organized, nicely presented commencement ceremony. I'm with them 100%. I know how important it is to walk across the stage, to shake hands with the dean or their provost or their president, and to see their parents, grandparents, siblings, relatives, friends smile at them for their success. That's very important. If there is a way we can guarantee the safety, personal safety of every attendee, if we do a physical ceremony, we'll do it. But until that moment, until we know for a fact that everybody will be safe, we are looking at a hybrid format so the student have some personal experience with the commencement and also additional virtual experience where they will be seeing on the screen, smiling still. So I know there are only a couple months left, 3 months left, not even 3 months before the May graduation. I received a number of emails from the students, a handful of them asking specifically, can we do an in-person commencement? Again, my answer has been, even when we can, we will. But we will make sure that people feel safe attending a in-person ceremony. And that's why we are looking at a hybrid format.
Western Illinois University President Dr. Guiyu Huang. In a moment, preparing for rising waters. Have we learned our lessons when it comes to spring flooding around the cities? But first, let's end February on a high note. The weather getting warmer, we're seeing more of the sun, and Laura Adams has some great ideas for all of us if we venture out and about.
This is Out and About through March 2nd. Join part two of Junior Achievements Trivia Bowl March 9th at 5:30 p.m. or celebrate the opening of the highly anticipated exhibition For America February 18th at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom at the Putnam Museum. WQPT and the Moline Public Library host The Black Church, This Is My Story, This Is My Song, a PBS documentary screening and discussion February 19th at noon. Also, February 21st at 3 p.m., hosted by St. Ambrose. The Mississippi Valley Fairgrounds host Friday Night Fight Fest featuring Sean West versus Stephen Edwards February 19th at 6:30 p.m. Plus, the Midwest Motorsports Auction takes place there February 26th and 27th from 4 to 10. On stage, Two Rooms by Lee Blessing, the story of married American educators working in Lebanon during the mid-1980s, February 19th through 21st at St. Ambrose University. Or join Tom Foolery on Tremont with Rebecca Gibson, two shows at 7 and 9:30 p.m. the 27th at Renwick Mansion in Davenport. Check out Circa 21's two virtual shows, Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love through the 21st, and Big Rock Candy Mountain, where a merry band of misfits sneak into a theater hoping to stay out of trouble. Available through March 1st. For more information, visit WQPT.org.
The flood forecast is out for Western Illinois and Eastern Iowa. The good news has a lot more to do with the ground than the water. The freeze depth isn't deep, so the soil won't take long to thaw before it can soak in all that water. And areas up north aren't as packed with snow as some would fear, because what melts up there, of course, flows down here. Planning for the spring ritual of flooding is something the Bi-State Regional Planning Commission does, and its executive director, Denise Bulat, joins us to talk about the best and worst scenarios that we now see. What is usual flooding? I mean, we've gotten so used to flooding each year. Is that usual flooding, or are we just rewriting the rules? Because we used to hear of 100-year floods and 500-year floods, and now it's almost like annual or biannual floods.
Yes, what we're seeing is an increase in more extreme weather. So flooding has increased in its severity. And we've seen some of our top 10 crests in the last 20 years rather than the last 40 or 50 years. So that's what part of the problem is that we're seeing extreme weather for whatever reasons, increases in extreme weather, and we're having to address it.
Well, and the other thing is that, as far as planning is concerned, everyone says build a wall and stop the flooding. Everyone has always talked about, wrapping the river in a certain way so that the water flows through. But there's real criticism of the fact that urban areas are just pushing the problem further down the river. I would assume that that's a major part of your planning, particularly when it comes to the Mississippi River.
Actually, it's both. Where we have levees, it wouldn't be prudent to remove them. If you look at all the assets behind those levees, we certainly need to maintain and recertify them. And we also need to provide pumps to get the stormwater from behind them during a flood event. So our communities still invest in the recertification of those levees and also in pumps that help get stormwater from the other side. However, there are lots of new mitigation measures like encouraging residential and business best practices on stormwater so it rolls more slowly, if you will, off of our properties. Also creating wetland areas, looking at ways to buy out properties, but buyouts are typically done on a voluntary basis. And once that property is bought out, especially with federal emergency management dollars, then that property stays in open space for forever. And that helps with the impacts of water with flooding and the impacts on residences and businesses.
And we have seen that very much in this area over the last 20 years in areas big and small. You think of Cleveland, Illinois, where basically much of the community had to move away from the Rock River. You look at the Garden Addition near the Mississippi River and the backwaters in Davenport. You think of Green Valley area in Moline along the Rock River where a huge buyout was occurring. And now we're actually seeing one in, of all places, the heart of Bettendorf along Duck Creek.
Yes, those are the buyout programs, and that shows how important it is for us to all do hazard mitigation planning. So each of the counties in the bi-state region actually prepares hazard mitigation plans. And those kinds of projects, plus simply enforcing our floodplain ordinances, encouraging best practices, and those specific projects that are buyouts or helping a local residents actually raise themselves out of the water and maybe allow for water to flow underneath that structure, all of those kinds of projects require funding, and those appear in hazard mitigation plans, which are updated every 5 years.
Well, and as you well know, the latest reports from the National Weather Service, the hydrologists, the ones that do the predicting, are saying that we could see some problems along the Rock River in particular. And you think of the Rock River, let's take a look at the Rock River in two different ways, I guess, because as you mentioned, I mean, having buildings that are built in a way so that the water flows through it, you see that in house after house along North Shore Drive and South Shore Drive in Moline. The people who live along the river are prepared for that. The other point of view that I wanted to ask also is that when you think of the Rock River and you're driving up I-88, you see those flooded farmlands. Take me through both of those, because we always think of the urban flooding as being the real issue, but the rural flooding also has a major issue as well for farmers and others.
Yes, it does. I think the farmers are fairly resilient. They're aware of which parts of their properties will likely flood, and so they plan on planting at different times. But when that flood water encroaches areas where a flood water is typically not expected, then that can be very impactful on the amount of crops that they can plant, and of course then how much they'll make from the sale of their products. So it can be, they do have to consider that and look at that. So the Rock River actually is interesting, because the Rock River is more of a local flooding issue. When we talk about a flood on the Mississippi River, that water is actually coming from the north. It's coming from Minnesota and Wisconsin, and it's coming down to us. On the Rock River, a lot of that flooding occurs locally, right here. It does come down the river, but it also occurs right here. And a lot of it occurs due to ice jams.
Ice jams have been really particularly brutal in the lower part of the Rock River. You're absolutely right.
Yes. And so what's happened, unfortunately, this past 1 month of below 32 degrees and sometimes below zero weather has meant that ice pack has gotten thicker and thicker. And now as we get warmer, it will crack up faster. And that's perfect for ice jams to form. So there will definitely be impacts locally on the Rock River.
Well, and we have seen, you know, I've been along that river where you're hearing it crunching. It is a dramatic picture. But as we say, people that live along that area are used to it and believe that's just a part of river living. Is that something, because you've said a lot of these programs are voluntary, but do you dissuade people from buying that?
Well, first of all, that would have to be disclosed in a purchase. So if someone new was buying a home on the Rock River and someone was selling their property, it would have to be disclosed in a purchase. And most lenders, if you were going to need a mortgage, would probably not even give a mortgage in the floodplain. They're very, very careful of that. In fact, the buyout you mentioned earlier in along Duck Creek in Bettendorf is being done by the city of Bettendorf because of that. There are homeowners who lived in residential properties in a nice middle-class neighborhood where their children could walk to elementary school, and all of a sudden they're part of a floodplain because of increased flooding, and they can't sell their home that they've lived in for 20, 30 years, and they're left without money to go retire. So that can be very, very impactful. So our floodplain ordinances do discourage development in the floodplain, especially in the floodway, and also in the 100-year floodplain and the 500-year floodplain. But the floodway, where the water actually flows in and out, that's where development is discouraged. And if it does occur, it does have to allow for those raised structures where water can flow in and out. The floodway cannot have any new instructions or obstructions placed there.
Denise, you alluded to the fact that we all have a role to play to mitigate flooding as far as how we run our personal homes and our personal lives. Are we looking at a more natural approach? Because I know that the people that operate Nahant Marsh think that the marsh should be expanded. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think almost 1 trillion gallons of water was filtered through that area during the 2019 floods. It was an amazing benefit, I guess, if there is such a thing, after that huge flooding.
Yes, Nahant Marsh was able to store some of the flood waters, which helped slow them down going downstream, say to Muscatine and further south. So it is very important. It also filters the water and helps it clean it up, really. And Nahant Marsh is expanding so that we can see more of that process occur in the Nahant Marsh area.
Denise Bulat, Executive Director of the Bi-State Regional Planning Commission. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.